Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhouseonline.com.au.
They're called the Paul Common Trio. We gotta turn this life around, becoming the most successful independent artist in Australia's history, then touring the US and collecting a Dove Award. It was a pretty sad day for PC3 fans back in February 2004 when Paul, Grant and Phil announced the trio was breaking up. They each did solo projects, played in other bands, but now, glad tidings, folks. Glad tidings have arrived. The guys have reformed the Paul Common Trio and are embarking on a new Australian tour. And Paul Coleman is on the line. Paul, it's been a while, mate.
I know, Mr. Sheridan. Now you're like a national radio legend.
I don't know about that. Isn't the word legend reserved for people who have died?
Not really in Australia. I think if someone puts the sauce correctly on your pie, they can be a legend too. You know, oh, thanks, you legend.
Yeah. Well, it might be. Yeah, the rumours about me dying are very premature, as the classic quote goes. Hey, mates, great news about you guys getting together. I tell you, the one thing that I'm a bit disappointed about, though, is that we actually haven't got you right here in the studio. You, Phil and Grant, one of my finest memories, actually, is a number of years ago in Perth, got the three of you in the studio, and I don't think I've ever laughed so hard since.
We definitely get a bit silly when we're together.
There is that chemistry, actually. You've always had it, haven't you? Have you missed that over the last few years when, you know, you've been solo again and Grant and Phil have done their own things?
Nothing's ever that I've ever done has been as good as the Paul Common Trio. Yeah. That's the truth. I go to Europe quite often and I have a bunch of guys in Germany and the Czech Republic and Norway that I use when I play. And it's really great. Don't get me wrong. But the chemistry of the three of us together is still the most compelling thing I've been involved with. And, yeah, you can't predict something like that. I think originally what happened was I kind of am this wacky entertainer guy whose number one thing is just loving connecting with the audience. And those guys are really like that too and very professional. And so they kind of wrote me in and make me more professional, and I dragged them places that they might never have gone. It's a fascinating combination, and I've actually never said it like that before. I might repeat that. That wasn't bad.
That was very quotable. Let's just actually recap the last few years, actually, because it has been a very interesting journey. So you were solo back in the 90s. Then, what, 97, 98, the Paul Common Trio is born when you, Phil, and Grant actually get together. Then you do really well throughout the late 90s, the early 2000s. You become, quote-unquote, the most successful Christian band in Australia. Then Mac Powell from Third Day hears of you. He actually calls you over to the US. You start touring with Third Day. Then you guys make the actual move to the US. Within a few years, though, it didn't take long before you'd actually disbanded. Now, just fill in the blanks there as to what happened there.
Yeah, about 9 months after we won New Artist of the Year at the Dove Awards, we split up. It was brutal over here in terms of just how much we had to tour to make ends meet. It's a pretty competitive market. And I think, upon reflection, Americans love their Christian music to be Christian music. They don't really want to be doubting what you're singing about. Mm. But we grew up all playing in pubs, and so the music that I started to write was music that you could sing in a pub or a church. Mm. And so I always felt like me and therefore the band were always in the middle of two markets. So while people loved us live and they still, you know, bought our record and we still had some number one songs and whatever, I think people over here, when it comes to Christian music, you know, they kind of want to hear the Four Spiritual Laws by about 48 seconds.
Yes, yeah.
And if your music has any degree of ambiguity, I think people are like, oh, I don't know. Huh. Maybe that had something to do with it. Maybe I'm blaming it on that. I don't know. But it just got very, very tough to make it financially. We had a lot of bills and a lot of expenses. And in the end, I'm driving a car around that's about to fall off the road with no AC. Huh. We're living in different apartments when people go on vacation. And I just said, guys, I need to get a house to live in and a car that won't die. And I don't know if we're really going to make it over here. Mm. And so, you know, amongst many other factors, it just became very, very difficult. It was kind of sad, really, because I thought we had something great. But, you know, you have to redefine success and you go, okay, is success meaning that you've got hit songs and selling out stadiums? What actually is it?
Yeah.
And interestingly, as we've gotten back together, it feels very, really, it feels great to have then be no pressure on us to have to make it make money right now or to worry about agents and managers and record labels. And it just feels really fun to get back to the three of us and music and our friendships and just seeing what the heck happens. That's kind of a fun idea right now. So that's what happened around that time.
Yeah. Paul Common from the newly reformed Paul Common Trio is with us on Open House tonight. Paul, that's really interesting what you've just said there, because I've had a number of US guests that we've actually had on the phone or maybe even in here in the studio. And after the interview, they'll say something along the lines of, oh, wow, you know, I wish we had a show like Open House in the US. And then we'll have a little conversation about how a show like Open House might go in the United States, given the fact that, just like the Paul Common Trio, we are, I guess, we are people of faith communicating into a world that is largely secular, and it actually means that we take a slightly different tack on things. We explore things from a slightly different perspective, whereas, like you said, you felt that maybe American audiences, Christian audiences, were wanting things, so Bible verse after each lyric, etc., goes to show how different the two cultures actually are.
Believe it or not, at the turn of the century, we were playing on the foreshore in Terrigal, New South Wales, in front of 15,000 just about drunk yobbos, and we went on at 11:15 and played an hour set of our own music to people that all they wanted to hear was K-San. And the whole reason why the churches were asked to book the entertainment for that was because there'd been so much violence and so many riots that the city council turned it over to the churches and said, listen, can you do anything about this? Cars are getting overturned. So they book us.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're like on stage and we're getting turf thrown at us, bottles thrown at us, and I'm not exaggerating. But we prevailed in the end. We took on that culture and we fought hard and we weren't pushovers, but we were like, we connected. And in the end, I don't want to over-spiritualize it, but I really felt like God came across the water under that foreshore in a very real kind of not churchy way. Mm. And how do you go from there to playing, you know, at a church event here? And it's almost like if no one's heckling you, I started to feel really uncomfortable. I'm like, what am I supposed to do? So, you know, you develop that kind of street fighting thing.
Yeah.
I have no problem with Americans or American Christian music or any of the artists or record labels or radio stations. None at all. They've all been really great to us. Mm. It's more just like, you know what? I think that in a lot of ways we just weren't the kind of fit that meant for big commercial success. And actually, I think we're all really okay with that.
Yeah.
It's all right.
Yeah.
I know we're harping on this, but let me just give you one quick story.
Yeah.
I remember when we first came over here, we went to a big festival. I won't say where it was. But it was a pretty big Christian festival. And we got there a day early because we just wanted to check it out. And I sat and watched every band, every speaker, walked around, kind of talked to people. No one knew us at all. And then we sat through everything the next day up until when we played. And I was sitting there and I was praying. I'm like, all right, God, what are we supposed to do here? Mm. Like, we could take our show in so many different directions. And what are we supposed to do? And I felt like, I thought, you know, no one has sung to the people that have been dragged along here by their religious friends. And I'm sure they're here. Mm. Like, no one sung to those people.
Mm.
And we were on after a worship band and a preacher that was shouting at everyone and all these bands walking up, opening up the Bible. And I thought, okay, I think what we need to do is just have a fun show and kind of back off on the whole intensity of the message. So we played and we went really well, I thought. And then in our autograph line, we signed autographs for the best part of 2.5 hours. And a lot of people came up and said, man, I really liked you guys. You know, I don't know about this Christian music thing, but I've enjoyed it so far. But you are my favorites because I just needed a break from hearing about Jesus for a while.
Interesting.
And then we didn't get booked again at that place. And I called my agent. I said, what's the problem? And he goes, oh, you know, they just didn't want you. I said, but we went really well. We sold like, you know, 500 CDs or something. And And I thought we did really great. And so I actually called the promoter, which apparently is something you don't do. But and I said, hey, you know, how come you don't want to book us? He's like, oh, this is a bit awkward. And I said, well, I know it is, but if you're not going to book us, I at least want to know why. Maybe I'll learn something. Mm. Maybe I screwed up. And he said, well, quite honestly, I thought your content was lacking. Mm-hmm. And I said to him, I said, so we're not playing there again? He goes, I don't think so. I said, well, seeing we're not, let me just give you a thought. I don't think you know the people at your festival, because everyone goes out there and preaches the same sermon. And then you know why? Because they're not actually listening to what anyone else does. They're sitting in their tour bus watching the hockey or something. Mm-hmm. And they don't really know what's going on. And there's a lot of people at your festival that are not Christians and aren't into Christian music and wanted something that had God in it, but without being belted over the head. Mm. And they came up in their droves to talk to us. And so I said, I think it's kind of sad. And I think that ended our chance of ever playing there again. So apparently that was a bit too confrontational. But I wasn't nasty about it, but I really was upset.
I'd love folks' thoughts on this one. 1-300-40-20-20. Do you resonate with what Paul's just talked about there? Are you one of those folks who maybe might be lining up after one of the Paul Common Trio performances and actually saying, hey, you know, finally I had somebody speak to me? 1-300-40-20-20. This is Open House across the nation. The Paul Common Trio are actually back for a tour. We'll give you details in just a second. Paul, what are you reading right now? I'm fascinated to know, because I think we kind of take similar approaches to this kind of thing. You do it in music, I do it with conversations. But what are you reading right now that is informing then the way that you're, I guess, you know, starting to craft your lyrics? And what are the inputs, what are the influences that are happening for you as you do your craft?
Good question. And by the way, I am the same as you. I write a conversation, but I just write songs so I can keep talking. It's functional for me. I'd rather do a talk show, to be honest with you.
Would you?
Oh, yeah, much rather.
Well, I guess I'll have to be replaced at some stage. So,
yeah, my fantasy is to do a talk show on TV where I just interview people and ask them whatever they think. But anyway, I might not pass any censorship laws. But currently, I've usually got a few books that are on the go. I'm reading a fascinating book by Daniel Lemoir, a Canadian producer. That's a really, really great book talking about music and about culture. Mm-hmm. I'm actually reading a book on codependence.
Oh, boy, I so want to go into that one, mate. Oh, so what has brought you at this point in time in your life, Paul Coleman, to feel that you just need to address the issue of codependence in your life?
Yeah. No, I've heard that a few times, so I thought I'd better read up on it. I'm also reading another book about intimacy, which is a fascinating book. I'm also reading a book called The Inner Game of Golf, which is all about the psychology of golf. Uh-huh. And I'm also starting reading back through the classics, and I'm going to start with Dostoevsky's Crime and Punishment.
Good.
Any two books you're reading?
Books that I'm reading right now, somebody we had recently on the show, a philosopher named Paul Moser, wrote a book called The Evidence for God, and his whole idea was that love is actually a proof, quote-unquote, a proof of God's existence. Very fascinating article. Wow. I'm reading a collection of essays by C.S. Lewis. I've been reading a little bit of Ken Geyer, you know, Windows of the Soul.
Yeah, I love Ken Geyer.
Yeah, some good stuff there. I'm currently working on a book project which is, you know, really about kind of seeing God in the everyday. So I'm kind of doing a lot of reading around that. So I'm actually finding myself reading a lot of sociology. Oh, it sounds so boring, doesn't it, Paul?
Not at all. Someone asked me on Christian radio last year, if you could play with any artist in the world right now and do a tour, who would it be? And I said, Marilyn Manson. He was like, well, that's a bit strange. And I said, oh, sorry, I should have said Michael W. Smith. I apologize. I said, you know, God made rhythm. God made melody. God made the guy's hands. He made his brain. He made his eyes. He made his body. Yeah. He made notes. He made music. So whether Marilyn Manson knows it or not, he's made in the image of God.
Yes, yes.
And he might be angry. He might be confused. He might be really, I don't know, but I'd be really fascinated to hear what that guy had to say, because I like hearing people's journey about why they believe what they believe.
Indeed.
So when you talk about those books, they're written by people who are, in written form, expressing that journey.
No. Just as Marilyn Manson is made in the image of God, so is music in some kind of secondary sense. Music and musical notes and the mathematical precision behind the chords and the way that they actually work in harmony, I think all of that can be traced back to the mind of God who created them. And that's why more and more I guess I'm kind of looking at these things. I was at a concert the other night. It was Sting with the Sydney
Philharmonic
Orchestra. Oh, mate, absolutely amazing. And I'm just sitting there in the Sydney Opera House going, okay, I'm surrounded by reflections of God. I mean, there's this beauty in the architecture of the very place that I'm sitting. Right. There's this amazing harmonies that's happening from Sting and from his backup singers. There's this, right. I mean, they were tight. I mean, the whole of the orchestra, as well as Sting and his band, they were tight. I don't think I heard one note out of place. There was a perfection and a beauty there. And I'm thinking, well, God, you know, I'm actually seeing a lot of you and hearing a lot of you right now. That is the thing that I'm finding if I have my conversations with folks that are kind of spiritually interested. That's the kind of conversations that are going, oh, maybe actually I've already caught a bit of a glimpse of God without even recognizing it. Absolutely.
That's right. I mean, when The Edge from U2 plays the opening part of Where the Streets Have No Name, that's the closest I've ever got to the throne room of God, you know. It's just, there's something about the sound that is anointed.
Completely with you. This is Open House. Paul Coleman is with us. You know, Paul, we could have these little chat sessions for hours. It's actually quite enjoyable. We should actually talk about your music just before we let you go. So you're doing the tour, and then there's a new album on the way too.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. It was Grant's idea to do this, and I think it was very smart. Instead of just trying to come up with material from scratch, we went back and looked through all the demos that we've made and then finished those songs. And so we did a lot of it over Skype and individually. And then we got together last month for a week here in Nashville and in my studio and just belted it all out and went into the studio. And so now, culminating with our 22nd and 23rd of April at Easterfest, we're doing a tour around Australia. And the great thing is we've got a whole, you know, six albums worth of old songs, but we've now got 11 brand new songs that we're, I mean, every single one of them we could play in the show. We really like them all. And so we spent the last month working on this first single, which was a song that I started backstage before I went on stage, and I was actually praying, and I said, God, I honestly can't understand why the heck you would love me, but I am so glad you do. And then that went into that little guitar riff. And then the next bit was worked on with me and Phil in Australia. And then Phil was on Skype. Grant and I were in my studio. We worked on the chorus. And then we belted out the rest together here. So it's actually like a really true, fresh collaboration of the three of us. And the lyric is really about what we're about, this idea that there is unconditional love. And it's absolutely amazing. And we don't deserve it, but we're taking it. We're enjoying it.
Well, that's the new single. It's called I Don't Know Why. We're going to hear about it for in just a second. The website for people who want to find out more, Paul Coleman.
PaulColemanTrio.com. No E in Coleman.
Easy as it comes. Paul Coleman. It's good to talk to you, mate. Always enjoyable.
Hey, Sheridan, you're a good man. Send me some books.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology. To hear more from Open House, visit openhouseonline.com.au.